Welcome back to Cairo Nights Thanksgiving pre-show special. On the line is a man who does not celebrate any holiday whatsoever. Comrade Sunshine. Good evening, comrade.
Good evening. I must give you one correction.
Yes, Comrade Sunshine.
I do celebrate one holiday. I celebrate the longest running dinner in the world. You would refer to it as the Last Supper.
I would.
I call it Passover.
Billy, am I on speakerphone?
No, I don't think so. Are you?
No, I'm asking you if you are now calling into my radio show on speakerphone.
No, I am not on speakerphone.
Why do I doubt you?
I have a lousy phone call. Well, here's what speakerphone sounds like.
Okay, no, go back to the other one.
This is speakerphone.
No, go back to the original, Billy.
Never doubt me again, young man.
So, Billy, I want to tease something. At 9:30, I'm going to play an old bit from the old radio station that you and I used to work for.
What are you going to play?
I'm going to play a bit, Billy, from when I was on the morning show and the program director / host of the morning show tried to humiliate me on air by putting me on.
Rosie tried to humiliate you?
Yeah, she did. I'll tell the story at 9:30, but I'll tease it right here. Basically, what happened is that I was supposed to be there every single morning at 4:30 in the morning. And that day in particular, I had the audacity. It was actually several years ago today, Billy. I had the audacity to show up instead of at 4:30 to show up at 5. And so she thought that it would be funny to try to humiliate me on the air by putting me on the spot. And basically what I did is I turned it into an improv bit and I improvised for about 6.5 minutes while she continued to try to humiliate me on the air. And so I'm going to play. It's a very special treat for the listeners. They're going to get to hear me as a baby broadcaster, Billy, so my voice isn't as refined and buttery smooth as it is right now. And it'll be a good time because it's a funny bit.
So you're standing up to the boss, messing around with the boss, huh?
I was. I think, well, Bill Graff is in the clip as well, Billy, but it must have been, this was probably from 5 years ago, Billy, maybe 4 years ago. It's a really old clip that our very good friend David Corsi sent to me after I did it. And David, for all the listeners out there, had been in radio since he was 15. He worked for every major station in Texas. So for me to get a compliment from David, Diamond Dave Corsi, I was, you know, over the moon about that. So that's the bit we're going to have at 9:30. If you can't catch it live, we do podcast the show. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you find podcasts. So Billy,
how long do those podcasts stay up?
Indefinitely. You can find all of them. Yeah, you can listen
so
to all.
I'm on your podcast thing indefinitely?
Yeah.
People can hear me?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, you are 100%.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a bad idea.
Yeah. So, Billy, I was working out this morning, and I tune in to G and Ursula with the great Matt Markovich, who was filling in for G this morning. And right as I tune in, I just happen to flip on G and Ursula, as I do when I'm running, and I tune in right as the verdict is handed to the judge in the Ahmed Aubrey case.
Did that speed up your run? Did that give you extra pep?
No, I stopped. I stopped, Billy, because I was on pins and needles because I really thought that they were going to get off because it was a really fast verdict. It's only 10 hours of deliberation.
Really fast. I think Thanksgiving had something to do with it.
maybe. So, but then, Billy, I'm listening to it. And, Billy, I've been emotionally involved in this case in the same way that I was emotionally involved in the Rittenhouse case because I have talked about it so much and I have debated it so much with so many people. I've heard so many bad arguments about self-defense and the Castle Doctrine and, well, he shouldn't have grabbed the gun and blah, 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 blah. All this awful stuff when it comes to Ahmed Aubrey, who, I'll clarify this for everybody out there if you're listening. There's footage of Ahmed Aubrey going into homes and not stealing anything. I don't care. There's footage of Ahmed Aubrey running around that neighborhood. I don't care. None of it makes any difference to me. He had not committed a crime. He was running down the street. He is running away from these two fools. And the idea that in your mind, as an American citizen in 2020, to get in your truck and follow that man with not just one firearm, Billy, three firearms, and you follow that guy, and when he tries to evade you, your inclination is to try to stop him physically with your truck, is a backwards way of thinking. I am glad that they were all found guilty, and I hope they all spend the rest of their lives in prison. I know that people are like, Jack, you're so biased. You're so biased. I don't care. I don't care whatsoever.
You're not biased. You're not biased. That's, you know, they executed this guy.
They did.
That's 100%. What happened. I mean, the bottom line is, and, you know, in America, you're, you know, it's like I heard someone on the radio refer to Kyle as a hero.
He is a hero.
Because you know, we kill people that deserve killing.
That's
well,
not true.
In America, we don't kill people that deserve killing. We give them a trial when we catch them committing a crime.
Sure.
We don't allow young men with guns just to sort of get lucky and kill people who happen to be scumbags in this case.
I've never made that argument, Billy. I've never made the argument that Kyle Rittenhouse was justified in killing a child molester or a wife beater. But what I have said is that Kyle Rittenhouse is most certainly justified in defending his life against a child molester and a wife beater. So,
except for he created this situation.
Billy, You're not going to ruin my mood, Billy. Yeah, So then the guilty verdict pops up. And I
such a release,
Billy, because I you know, Billy, you know me, I'm a cinephile. I love film. And I just started rewatching Mississippi Burning with Willem Dafoe and Gene Hackman and all these great.
What do we learn from that movie?
Well, I think, Billy, that in my perception on this has changed over the last 2 years, very much so. I think that although racism to that degree isn't so much at the forefront of American consciousness, it is very much so for a decent percentage of the population at somewhere at a tertiary level in consciousness. I get it on a regular basis on my show, Billy, when people try to cite The Bell Curve by Charles Murray to me.
Right,
which is a book that was funded by a eugenics program. I get it when people try to
30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago with data that's been dismissed by academics currently. I get it when people cite statistics like 1350 at me that are founded in basically nothing. I get it all the time when people are unwilling to look at crime rates in Appalachia, which meet and exceed crime rates in places like Chicago. I get it all of the time. And I don't think that it's because people think of themselves as a hood-wearing, cross-burning KKK member. I think that people now, Billy, have moved on to a kind of scientific racism that they try to reinforce with crime statistics instead of actually analyzing, for example, what poverty does to a community and how poverty affects specifically young men in a community.
Thank you for getting it, Jack. You get it. Thank you.
I do get it, and I get it way more than many other, I would say, right.
You're not a racist, that's why. These are people who, in the back of their mind, they really are racist, and so they look for excuses to justify it. You know, we're familiar with that. You see it here, you've seen it on the radio station we used to work at.
You know,
it's just part of what we have to deal with, more in this country than in most. I'm afraid.
You know, Billy, a racist actually texted into the show last night when you and I were chatting, and this racist wanted to know why I am so keen on referring to people as white supremacists, or why I'm so quick to refer to somebody as a racist.
I don't think you're quick. I think you do it when it's appropriate.
Right. And so, but this is what's weird about it, Billy, is that we yesterday, do you remember what we were talking about?
No, of course not.
We were talking. We were talking about Richard Spencer and the Unite the Right rally, which is Richard Spencer. Sorry to break it to the racist who texted in last night. Richard Spencer is a self-avowed white supremacist and ethno-statist. I don't need to call Richard Spencer a racist. He calls himself a racist. So, but basically, this person asked me, he said, why are you so keen to not point out to point out racism and white supremacy, but not to point out the rioting and the looting, so on and so forth? And I thought to myself, this is some fool who never listens to my show. Because if you ever hear me ripping on San Francisco for letting people break into CVS's or Walgreens. Right. So, but this is the thing with a racist, Billy, is that a racist suffers from a fundamental flaw in logic, which is something that
he has hearing problems to begin with.
Just like you, Billy. But a racist will always make an accusation before asking a question, or they will package a question as an accusation, that racist did yesterday. Well, why don't you call out the stuff that black people do? Okay, well, give me an example and I shall do so. But don't. Oh, he wanted me to talk about the guy that ran into the Christmas parade, and he wanted me to do a thorough analysis of that guy, who I won't even say his name because he's such a deplorable individual.
That's right. All we can say about him is he should have been kept in jail a lot longer.
Right.
Every time.
Right. Yeah. So my question to people out there, or at least this racist, would be, what level of analysis do you want me to give you other than a sociopath was leaving a domestic violence dispute, got into his car, and then ran into a Christmas parade? He should go to prison for the rest of his life, if not be sentenced to death, in my humble opinion.
And you know, the problem I, of course, have is, how come they can't just stick with the subject before moving on? Let's talk about what we were talking about. Let's talk about white racism before we get to the black race.
Sure. And I find that to be really interesting as well, Billy. It's a pivot, is what we call it in a debate.
Yeah.
And somebody said, when I'm trying to call out the white supremacists.
Not helpful.
It's not helpful whatsoever. So, Billy, back to the Ahmaud Arbery case. I hear the guilty verdict, and then I hear that guy in the background go, woo, felt
he jumped
that.
Up.
I felt it, and Ahmaud Arbery's father came out, and he came out this afternoon, and he said today is a good day, which I totally agree with. I celebrate this verdict, and I think, Billy, if anything, it's time to introduce a new meme, Billy, because if you remember, you and I had a very healthy and spirited debate last week in which you said that you were suspicious of this case because there was only one black man on the jury, and you said that this was not a jury of his peers, and you were very fired up. And and I tried to tell you, Billy, that a jury of your peers has nothing to do with ethnicity, and it has nothing to do with gender, and it has nothing to do with sex, but it has everything to do with the fact that you were being judged by your fellow citizens. And do you remember what you said to me, Billy? Of course you don't.
Nope.
You said that I was wrong. And now, Billy, we are going to introduce a new meme to the show where whenever I'm right about something, we are going to be calling it Walking on Sunshine, because I'm walking all over you, Billy. I'm walking all over you today. I was 100% right, and you were 100% wrong, and now I'm walking on sunshine, Billy. How do you like that? Take that, Billy. Walking on sunshine, you filthy communist.
I was
totally right about this. And what did you say, Billy? You said that there was no way that Ahmaud Arbery was going to get a fair trial, and I was totally right about it, and you were totally wrong. And don't it feel good, Billy? Don't it feel good, son?
Song for me. I love this song. Don't ruin it.
Billy, why do you doubt my intellectual prowess? Why do you doubt my ability?
It's not you I doubt. It's the white folks of the South. I don't trust them. I gotta say, you know, I judge them poorly. I still think they should have been allowed to secede, frankly. I'm not happy with the white
Billy,
boys.
Billy, I just went on this whole diatribe about racism, and then you have to come in and be a liberal racist. Why do you have to do
this,
Billy? Why do you have to do this to me? Well, I don't understand it. I literally, Billy, just went on like... I literally just went on a huge rant, Billy, about how much I don't like white supremacists and I don't like racists. And then you agree with me, and then not a scant 3 minutes later, after we introduce the new meme to the show, you have the audacity to then turn around and be a liberal racist on my program. Why, Billy? Why do you have to do this? We were so close to creating the utopia where liberal and not liberal could come together and shake hands and meet in the middle and celebrate the fact that the justice system worked today for Ahmaud Arbery and by extension many black men out there, and you have to just douse your darkness all over this beautiful day by saying you don't trust white Southerners? Come on, Billy. Come on, buddy.
I trust them a little bit today.
Okay. Well, we're just going to have to...
You're going to have to live with that.
We're just going to have to live with that. I will say, though, Billy, I will make some criticisms of this case. I don't necessarily care what Al Sharpton has to say on this case whatsoever. He came out and he commented on it. I really don't care. I find that...
He's entitled to an opinion, sure, like every other American.
Sure. But when
the defense stood up and said, can we have no more black pastors in here?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Talk about trying to get a mistrial.
Well, that was in reference to Jesse Jackson, Billy. That was in reference to Reverend Jesse Jackson.
And Al Sharpton. Yeah.
I have at this point, I don't have a lot of good faith towards Al Sharpton as a thinker or as a political commentator. And I find his ability to wedge his way into public discourse over the last 50 years to be astounding. His work during the civil rights movement was amazing, and he is a brave man, braver than I, for all of his work that he did all those many years ago. And then sometime around the 80s, Billy, he turned into a complete and total nut job. Do you remember when he was debating, God, what was that show? I'm always going to forget this, Billy. What was that show in the 90s with the guy?
Crossfire?
No, it wasn't Crossfire. It was that show with the guy who was always smoking. Do you remember that?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I like that guy, too. He was crazy, though.
What was his name?
Oh, I'm trying to think of it. Oh, I can see him. I can picture him.
I can see him and I can picture him. What was his name?
Oh, I'm not going to be able to come up with it right now.
Probably
live radio.
He was the son of a singer, right? He was the son of a...
Yeah. And that was a good show. That was after Joe Pine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is going to drive me nuts. Someone in the text line has to know what
I'm
talking
about. He was mean as hell.
Mean? Yeah, he was really, really mean. So Al Sharpton went on that guy's show again and 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 again. And you can go find clips of him on YouTube saying the most deplorable things about everybody. Gay people, Jews, white people. I mean, the guy was a really deplorable human being. And the fact that nobody...
He has a difficult past, absolutely.
The fact that nobody says, hey, Reverend Al Sharpton, what's the deal with Freddie's Fashion Mart and why did you sick your mob on all those gay guys back in New York back in the day? The fact that nobody has ever questioned him on that and now he gets to walk around like he's some kind of truthsayer is deeply upsetting. All right, Billy, we have to get out of here. I'm tired of your communist nonsense. But, Billy, before we get out of here, do tell. Yep. Thanksgiving, any special plans for us?
Yes, I'm going over to an old friend of mine's family.
This is all a lie, Billy. You don't celebrate Thanksgiving in communist Russia, Billy. This is all a lie. This is all a tremendous lie. We will take
turkey.
We'll take a really quick whoops. I don't want to do that. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this with Tarek Ansari.
We don't believe you. Because we the people.
You hear the music. You know what time it is. Fringe or Based, starring Jack Stein, featuring supporting cast member Tarek Ansari. Tarek.
Wow.
Joins us for Cringer Based. And Tarek, I have to say this because you and I both work in the same industry. Today's like news cycle. Am I correct in just saying this, Tarek? Because I know that you were behind the board all day. It's a slow day. Outside of the Ahmaud Arbery case, there's almost nothing going on in the news, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was especially apparent when we started getting into, you know, it comes out this morning around, about 10:30, 11-ish. And then we're covering that. And after a while, you can tell it's a slow day because we're just starting to get into, you know, well, you know, the suspects in the trial had terrible hair, and, you know, we get into like the things we shouldn't be talking about, but we have nothing else to talk about. So we're just like, well, you know, redheads, you know, it's just, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's a slow news day. So we take this one story and we grind it for all we have. Ugh.
Yeah. I was actually watching an analysis. I won't name the network, but the analysis was they were comparing Kyle Rittenhouse's breathing pattern. I fool you not, Tark. Kyle Rittenhouse's breathing pattern to Greg McMichael's breathing pattern, and they had them side by side, and they had a body language analyst explaining to people how guilty people breathe versus how innocent people breathe. And I thought, this is some woo-woo nonsense. But anyway, Tarek, what do you got for us today in Cringe or Base? Because that was pretty cringe. That's my cringe of the day. I saw that and I hard cringed. What do you got for us?
No, and I, well, today it's a little bit of both. But I'll tell you what, tomorrow's a big day. Because, yeah, it's Thanksgiving, but, you know, gobble, gobble, whatever. The big news that's coming out tomorrow, and if you don't think this is big news, you are a fool. A fool on the hill.
Yep.
Because the Beatles are releasing, or should I say Peter Jackson, has a 3-part documentary regarding the Get Back / Let It Be sessions for the Beatles that were taped in early 1969. They were made into a depressing film that nobody liked.
Yes.
And were shelved away for years. And now suddenly they're taking all the footage plus like hours and hours of other footage. And it's a 3-part documentary. Everybody's excited for it. So am I. However, here's the catch. It's detailing the sessions for one of the worst Beatles albums.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I'm all for, you know, like, oh, let's hear everything about the Beatles. Let's see what we can like get like video wise. Cool. I'm all for that. But like, why is it that we can't get any footage of all of Rubber Soul, of Revolver, of Sgt. Pepper, of the White Album? Like, I've seen videos of the band making the White Album. Are we 100% sure there weren't film reels from back then? Like, the Beatles are probably the most famous band in history, and we don't have anything. We don't have anything. We have to pull this from arguably their worst album. I'm not going to lie. I really do not like Let It Be.
Yeah.
There's some good songs on it, but I'm going to watch it for sure. But really, people getting excited about this, you're going to listen to, like, you know, like One After 909 and be like, you know, it's not amazing. Jack, your thoughts.
And also, it's coming out on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Disney, like, what? Disney Plus. Not,
what
you know,
did the mouse have to do with this? Like, seriously.
It is I am so disappointed that this is gonna be on Disney Plus. I don't want to support Disney as a company. I don't want to give Disney any of my money. So now, not that I do this, Tarek, I would never recommend that somebody do this because this is a felony, but I certainly will not be illegally downloading it on the internet because that is a crime and I would never do such a thing. And you could not convince me to get a tour and to rip that movie from an online, you know, service. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it, Tarek, because that's illegal and I obey the law in the United States.
Yes.
But I will say this too. Speaking of Law and Order, Shane, I've seen the trailers for it, and do you know what I noticed more than almost anything else in the trailers? Can you just take one guess?
I'm gonna guess you see a lot of Beatles.
I see a lot of Yoko. I see a lot of Yoko floating around, being there during their songwriting sessions, hanging out with the band. Yoko Ono is objectively the least talented human being to ever live. And
oh,
for some
gosh.
Reason, for Please. Some reason, because of her proximity to John Lennon, people have given her a tremendous amount of leeway and credibility that she does not deserve. She is the definition of a bottom feeder, a parasite, and an orbiter, Tarek. It is.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I'll just say it, man. You have somebody who has made tens of millions of dollars off of being associated with John Lennon. And moreover, did you ever hear the story, Tarek, about how John had written a bunch of letters to his son? Are you familiar with this story?
I'm not, no.
So John had written a bunch of letters to his son, and they were found in a box or something like that. Rather than give them to John Lennon's son. Do you know what Yoko Ono decided to do with those letters?
What did she do, Jack?
She auctioned them off. She auctioned them off for money for herself. So I have no problem saying awful and terrible things about Yoko Ono. And if I had to guess, Yoko Ono, I think, is I've met so many, and I'm going to sound like such a terrible person. I've met so many people in my life that have followed that same model where they sidle up to the most talented people that they possibly can. And then they just sucker fish right onto them. And then they drain that human being. I have seen it happen so many times. Sorry, I don't want to mention any names, but I've seen it so many times. And I one of these people I might throw under the bus is like Pete Davidson, somebody like that. Someone who is an absolute talentless hack.
Dark. You made me cough there because I was so incorrect, Jack. My God, Pete Davidson is not a talentless hack.
Yes, he is. He's totally talentless hack. I have not heard him say a funny thing since his last stand-up special. I have not heard him have a single funny utterance in years. His Joe Rogan impersonation, Tark, was giga cringe. Every bit that he's on SNL is cringe. Objectively. Well, anyway, getting back to the Beatles, Tarek, what do I think about this being released? Is this based or cringe? I'm going to have to see it. My feeling is that it's going to be kind of cringe. My feeling is that it's going to be ponderous and bloated and long and boring.
I disagree. I actually disagree with everything you just said.
Wow.
Because I'm trying to go back to each point you made. I'll start with this. Yoko Ono should be giving crap for what she did with those letters. That's bad. That's crappy. But also, you've got a case where Yoko came into John's life. This is late 67, early 68, if I'm not wrong. And let's be fair. John Lennon was not doing well mentally, socially, whatever we want to say. Okay. But like John Lennon, you know what? You can give Yoko all the crap you want. I don't think she should have been in the sessions. She was probably the reason the Beatles broke up. They were going to break up anyway. Let's be fair. But the fact is that, oh, my face is getting red, Jack. But the fact is you got to give Yoko a little bit of credit for at least helping John through what he was going through while still maintaining that she's somewhat talentless compared to him. Sure. Also, what you said about Pete Davidson, you're straight up wrong. Won't comment on that.
And also,
the documentary is going to be good, by the way, because Peter Jackson spent a long time on this with his fellow New Zealanders. Is that what he's New Zealand? I don't know. But they spent a long time on this. And I would have to think, and these people seem like they love the Beatles, I would have to think it would have taken a lot of egos in that room to overcome the amount of interest they had in that project. I think it's going to be good. But yeah, again, the fact that it's on Disney Plus.
All right, let me make a quick recommendation to everybody. If you want to see one of the best documentaries ever made, watch They Shall Not Grow Old. It's a documentary from Peter Jackson that he made in 2018. It's about World War I, where they take the old footage and they repair it, and they take it from 16 frames per second to 24 frames per second. And it is an amazingly well-done documentary, and I recommend that everybody see it. Tarek, in the last 30 seconds we got, what are we going to talk about with Shane Peterson when we get back?
Well, Shane Peterson thinks he can do all the Beatles covers from the Let It Be album, except he only sings off-key, and he calls it avant-garde, except he has less talent doing the Beatles covers than Yoko Ono. Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy development.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Shane, we didn't have a show meeting today because you were running the D.B. Cooper special. Shane, how many hours have you been working the last, like, 72 hours? I feel like every time I'm speaking to you, you're in the building doing something.
In the past 72 hours, I have worked 33 hours.
Wow.
Yep, I am living here.
That's pretty awesome. Wow. That's pretty awesome, Shane. So what do you got for us tonight, buddy? What's going on?
So I, you know, between doing all these other shows today, Jack, I was able to find one story that I think that we can talk about, because something that I think that we need to focus on in the holiday season, which is charity, giving back to those that are less fortunate, giving to those that are in need, and also, you know, just setting a good example for your community. And I found this article. This is from ABC 7 News Los Angeles. Snoop Dogg joins the Rams and Chargers to give away 2,500 turkeys to Inglewood residents. So, you know, Snoop Dogg being an Inglewood resident himself, he's going out and going into his community and making sure that some of these, you know, families that are from low-income housing, some, you know, some less fortunate situations are able to have, you know, a little bit of charity, a little bit of, you know, that dry bird, that turkey in their belly come Thanksgiving. But it also made me think of, you know, a very, very famous Seattle figure in sports that, you know, is actually quite famous for this.
What are you doing for Christmas?
Christmas?
I mean, I got to get to Thanksgiving first. I'm going to give out turkeys back in the hood.
I'm with you. You want me to come?
You will. I appreciate it, though, big dog.
Hang on.
But I'm going to be in the hood giving out turkeys like Nino Brown, baby. Like Nino Brown, trying to restore my community.
So that was the legendary Seahawks running back Marshawn Lynch, who, you know, has been known to go out and hand out a few dry birds during the holidays. And when seeing all of this and thinking about, wow, you know, we're seeing some people give back, I actually looked up, 10 local Seattle charities that might need your help this holiday season. So I wanted to just give a few shout outs. We have the Treehouse organization that helps out thousands of foster kids each year. We have the
Y organization.
Yeah, great organization. The YWCA, the Lake City Holiday Project, Fair Start, Youth East Side Services, Food Lifeline, West Side Baby, the Emergency Feeding Program, and the Tacoma Rescue Mission are all looking for volunteers this holiday season. So if you want to be like Snoop Dogg and Marshawn Lynch, there's plenty of, you know, charitable places that are looking for help, so we can, you know, make sure that this holiday season is a little bit more warmer and inviting to some of those that might not have it as good as the rest of us.
You know what I find really irritating, Shane, is that, like, I read these counter articles that people write when somebody does charity work, and they basically sound like this. Like, they'll take the article about Snoop Dogg giving out 25,000 turkeys, and then someone from like Slate or Huffington Post will be like, while we appreciate the gesture by Snoop Dogg, the fact that this amount of Americans can't afford a turkey says more about the corrupt system we all live in. They like ruin the gesture of charity by using it as a segue to talk about how much they don't like the United States. And I find that to be deeply irritating. Have you ever seen these articles?
Oh, I see them all the time. It's pretty crazy. You know, you see a lot of them in weird places like Vulture and a bunch of other spots where they're just attacking people who are just trying to do good out here. Doesn't matter whether they have, you know, millions of dollars in their bank account or if they're just, you know, somebody who talks on the radio. It's just people trying to do some good stuff out here. And people always got to try to find a way to, you know, to break people down and make them not seem as good as they might be, or, you know, try to even call them out. But again, some of these writers are absolutely, you know, they're off their rocker, man.
I'll give you an example with the Ahmed Aubrey case today. You have no idea how many articles that I read that should have been celebrating a just verdict, a guilty verdict for all the losers who are participating in the murder of Ahmed Aubrey.
Losers.
And instead what they did, Shane, is they took what should be a very happy day and they twisted it to make it seem as if this means nothing. And there was a lot of quoting of Malcolm X. Malcolm X has a quote where he says, "You stick a 9-inch knife in my back and then you take it out 6 inches, there's still a problem. You remove it entirely, there's still a problem. It's the healing is how you fix the problem." I read that quote many times today, and I'm thinking, for Ahmed Aubrey's family, like, this is such a wonderful day for them because justice was given to that family. How dare all these losers out there try to take it away from that family by saying that this verdict today means nothing about society at large in the United States. Anyway, Shane, before I get totally off my rocker on this particular issue, Stacey Jo Ross is going to be coming on, and I had an opportunity to email a couple of celebrities for the Emerald City Comic Con that's popping up soon, and I go into great detail with Stacey Jo Ross as to why I don't like to do those kinds of interviews, and Shane, Our very favorite Aaron Rodgers is back in the news for saying that he had COVID toe. Find out why. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.